This is The Topic is Trek, episode 41, for Friday, March 29th, 2019. De Strom, Saving Time. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, I'm sure my pronunciation of really forced to be Daystrom saving time. I got to work those puns in as best you can.
The best part about that was your connection kind of went robotic when you right after the pronunciation.
Just, it wasn't just me then.
No.
Okay. Well, hopefully that's the one and only time that will happen.
But I thought you were speaking like Binar or something.
Yeah.
Right after the pronunciation of
I'm speaking dial-up.
Yes. Beep, boop, bitch. All right. Well, hello, everyone. Hopefully that was my only robotic go this evening, because Skype sometimes can play little tricks. But I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And as you've already heard, beaming in to join me as always, first is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Hey, how's it going?
And Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hey, everybody, where's my pants?
Can we get Gary back again?
Sorry, I was looking for a new catchphrase.
I've just cracked open a cold bottle of Red Angel beer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
Too soon?
We'll have to figure out what's inside the bottle, though. Will it be this thing or that thing? Who knows?
Spoiler
anyway, the whole episode is going to be full of spoilers. So
I'm not entirely current, so I haven't watched the last.
What? Oh, well, you're going to be spoiled all to get out then.
Actually, Facebook spoiled it for me because I was a few days late.
Oh,
somebody just dumped it. It was like Blue Ribbon Army? No, I think it was the Discovery page, and somebody just blurted it right out. I'm like, doggone it.
I know. Entertainment Weekly is the worst at dropping a title in the article, and you just skim it by and you go, oh, gee, thanks. And then just spoil it right there.
Doing all the research for the show and getting all the different headlines that I get, it's like, yeah, nothing. Nothing's a surprise to me anymore. So I had to give up that dream, you know.
You grizzled podcaster, you know it all.
I do. Podcaster. That doesn't sound good.
The J. Jonah Jameson of podcasting. There we go.
I've seen it all, kid.
All right. Well, before we begin our subspace chatter, I want to get you guys' reactions to, I got two stories here. Now, the first one is that Anthony Rapp, who is our Paul Stamets in Discovery, he's going to be joining Vivian Kerr in a movie upcoming called Scrap.
Isn't he the little guy on Ice Age that's always chasing the acorn?
I don't think you're thinking of the right thing. No, I don't think that's in the Scrat I think you're thinking of. But the other news of interest is that Sonequa Martin-Green, during her off time, will be joining LeBron James in Space Jam 2.
Oh, I love that on my toast in the morning.
I don't know. I know that production had been talked about and talked about and talked about. It, you know, been through all these different iterations. I didn't realize that it was finally going to be happening. And that Sonique was going to be in it. It's just kind of seemed to come out of left field. I don't know what to make of that.
She couldn't get on the Picard show.
Yeah.
Oh, she's probably on the Picard. Let's face it. She's probably on the Picard show. Everybody's on the Picard show. I'm on the Picard show, for crying out loud. My fish are on the Picard show. Everybody's
going to put
Picard
Bugs Bunny in the Picard show.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
Yeah, absolutely. But that news aside, we have a lot to cover.
What's up, Spock?
Spock wasn't in the Picard. You are all over the place.
No, it just, I was thinking, what's up, Doc?
Have you heard the show before, Chuck?
Yeah, were you surprised? Well,
remember, on this show, the topic is Trek.
I pity the poor new listener.
There we go. There we go. All right, it's time to turn our attention to Mr. Charlie X, because we're going to open up Subspace Chatter.
Oh, is he still hanging around?
You don't need all Subspace Chatter.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely hanging around. Speaking about hanging around, the stories about a certain show just keep hanging around, even though we don't have the show yet.
This is like perpetual news.
Yes. Right. Why don't you tell us a bit about it?
It's going to have its own meme pretty soon, if we haven't started one already. All right, from IndieWire.com, Star Trek intends to do right by Jean-Luc Picard, but the Next Generation spinoff featuring the Starfleet captain played by Patrick Stewart will feel much different from what's come before. At the PaliFest panel for Star Trek Discovery on Sunday, series co-creator Alex Kurtzman, ended the event with a highly anticipated update. I'm going to be in the show.
Yeah.
Quote, I had an amazing experience yesterday. I sat at Patrick's kitchen table and I heard him read the first episode and I almost cried, he said. It was quite something. He's at an amazing place in his life. He's so excited. I'm so excited. The only way this universe, I think, works correctly is if each show is really different and speaks to a different part of Star Trek. This is going to be a very thoughtful, psychological portrait in a lot of ways, said Kurtzman. Quote, we all know what Patrick means to the world and why he, like so many legendary characters in Star Trek, has endured and what he's represented. He, in some way, has to go through a gauntlet to find that again. Things have changed for him and changed him in some ways, and yet he is so deeply and fundamentally still Picard. We're thrilled at what we're going to deliver. I know Patrick is really excited. The cast is coming together beautifully.
So that is, I think, our first hint about something that, well, he's still Picard, and yet something has fundamentally changed, yeah. And he has to go through this gauntlet. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure what that thing is. And we know that it involves, that the story takes place in light of the incidents of the destruction of the Romulan homeworld.
He had a synthahol abuse problem, and he's going through rehab.
I don't know. Is it because that means all the Prince of Nemesis were destroyed and he just doesn't know what to do with himself anymore? I think the galaxy
would rejoice.
I think he's in a relationship, actually got married with B4.
Oh,
and they're dealing with, you know,
it's Android, a sitcom.
Android marriage in the future.
Who gets custody of the Roomba?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I would say we're going to know more soon, but I don't know if we're going to know. We're going to keep talking about it real soon, but I don't know if we're going to know any more real soon.
I just want to see how Clinton stitches this thing back together with a segue.
My goodness. Well, the first two episodes of the Star Trek Picard, Star Trek Destiny, Star Trek Unnamed Project to be named at a later date.
Series that still has no name.
Yes. The director will be, as we mentioned before, Hanel Culpepper. And she recently Instagrammed out a photo of herself in a set that looked oddly familiar, although it wasn't really what we thought it was going to be. Her Instagram photo shows her standing in a room that kind of looks like the holodeck from Next Generation. But she's also wearing a VR goggle headset. And what she's doing is she's previewing sets. I'm not sure. It doesn't really say whether or not it's for Discovery or for the Picard series. But essentially, she's looking at the set in virtual reality before they bother to even build the set.
That's a really cool way of doing it. Who thought of that?
I don't know.
That's amazing.
And people are most of all wondering, why is there a holodeck set behind you? You know, it's not really a holodeck set. It looks like just some black paper
with some yellow tape on it.
Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't even reach the floor.
Yeah. It's kind of a hollow holodeck, if you ask me. But anyway, I thought it was an interesting use of this technology and something that I imagine productions are probably using across the board at this point. Because why not, right? If you have, if you can just in a computer build a representation of your set and allow the director to walk through it, they can say, no, this is low, that's too high, you can be able to break this wall out and...
That's and easy just for you to say.
It, it is indeed, and I just did.
Her, her name reminds me of one of those.
Broke up again.
Her name reminds me of one of those things you do when you bang your knee on the corner of a table. Hanel Culpepper.
I thought she was in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or something. Anyway, so we've now gone to talk about the Picard series and the director of the Picard series, but we're going to transition away from that because this story that I talked about was about set dressing, and the next story is about dressing on the set. Oh, you see what I did there? Oh, it's just completely seamless. And Craig is going to tell us about it.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, all right, so thanks.
So Star Trek The Next Generation Star Trek Discovery is going to try and bring back one of the strangest uniforms that they displayed, and that's the unisex dress. And I love the pic of that guy. It looks like he's like, huh, I didn't know that. So he has that look on his face. So after The Next Generation puts its stars, well, most of them except Counselor Troy, in figure-hugging jumpsuits to reflect the 100 years of change in Starfleet, it attempted to reconcile the connections of the past of the original Star Trek, in which the female Starfleet officers wore mini skirts rather than pants, by introducing what was at the time a very bold idea, unisex mini skirts worn by both male and female crew members, or as they're weirdly officially known as the scant.
The infamous scant.
You don't see anybody cosplaying one of these too much, do you?
I have seen it though.
I have seen it at Dragon Con, but I don't.
Craig,
I don't know.
You could pull that off?
I can now. 2 years ago, I couldn't. So early episodes of TNG included background characters of multiple genders wearing scants. I can't even say that. That's weird. But the design never really broke out of that background nod to the miniskirts of old. Now, however, Discovery costume designer Gersha Phillips has confirmed that the show is bringing scant back. I think it's Justin Timberlake's next album.
Yes.
I was going to say.
I brought sexy back. Now it's time for scant. There we go.
Yeah. And what's to do in a big, way going forward. I guess they're going to put Pike in one of these things. Speaking to Daily Dot about the fashions of Discovery's second season, Phillips confirmed that sometime in the last few episodes of the season that are left to air, viewers will see scant make its comeback.
Baby's got scant.
Yeah. So we have exclamation point. They haven't come out yet, but they'll be in later in the season. I was looking for a particular character to do it on, but I'll just keep reading. And we didn't have anybody specific. It will come up closer towards the end. But we will do it, and we will try to do it going forward. Not a fan of the scant, by the way.
No, it's interesting because the top of this article, and by the way, we have links to all the stories we're talking about, as well as several other stories we didn't get a chance to talk about. You just go over to thetopicistrek.com and look for the show notes for episode 41, and you can read all about these, and you can the picture that befuddled gentleman in the scant in The Next Generation, just kind of staring off into space. But at the top of the article, you know, it shows the character Nan in a uniform that she has been wearing a couple times on Discovery, which is that type of shape that the scant is, but it's just the regular Discovery looking uniform. And apparently that is not what Gersha Phillips is talking about.
Oh, okay.
Because she says the episodes haven't aired yet. And this one has been on for a while. So unless there's a sync problem with when she was making the comment and when the episode was aired, it sounds like this is not the outfit that she's talking about. So I'm not sure, but I don't know. Anybody else, you know, clamoring for the scant to make it make a comeback?
I think there's like very scant. Never mind. I was trying to make a joke about.
I knew where you were going with that. I just want to see a struggle.
You just watch the train wreck.
That's right. Yes. Well, speaking of scant, we scan to be seeing a certain character again next season, and we're gonna we kind of knew this already, but we're getting a bit more details on some things as we approach the end of this season of Discovery. And so Chuck is going to tell us a bit about that.
So from cinemablend.com, Anson Mount's Captain Pike has been one of Star Trek Discovery's most beloved characters since he first beamed onto the bridge. And there has been no shortage of fans calling for a spinoff of the character to be added to the growing list of CBS All Access series. Unfortunately, it was recently revealed Mount's contract is up this season. Showrunner Alex Kurtzman confirmed Pike's story in Discovery will be wrapped up, but in an unexpected way few may see coming. Wheelchair.
We see that one coming.
Oh, wheelchair that has voice activation instead of boop.
Did not see that coming.
It has Siri integration.
We're going retro. We're doing Stephen Hawking. Out of my way, Slowpoke. We will sync up with canon, and obviously, if you want to know the story of Captain Pike, you know what his fate was. It won't be exactly what you think this season, but we will be consistent with that story. There will be a dimension shed on that story that you will have not known or have thought of. The accident was really, he was just baking in the kitchen and things got out of control.
Save the liver!
The grease fire.
Alex Kurtzman is teasing an extra dimension to Captain Pike's story, which takes a rough turn following the events of Discovery. Pike eventually earns the title of Fleet Captain and leaves the Enterprise. He's then involved in a terrible accident, which leaves his body badly scarred and paralyzed to the point he is confined to a wheelchair and unable to speak. Star Trek fans only know this through The Menagerie, of course, which shows Spock risking court-martial in order to deliver his former captain to Talos IV. To return him for, but there's a restocking fee though.
Yes, well, he's certainly damaged as well.
Star Trek Discovery fans will recognize that name as where Burnham and Spock went to help Spock regain his sanity, and where they met Vina. Spock delivers his former captain to Talos IV so that the Talosians can give him a life free from his body and pain. We all know that good backstory.
Right, we all know that. So the question is, what can you add to that or insinuate about that coming in the future in this series? Is it that he gets his promotion to commander of the fleet? Or is it, you know, I'm not sure what we're going to find out there that will shadow. I'm thinking we've discussed before that it'd probably be a bummer to have like that accident happen on the show. It's like, I don't really need to, you know, get into all that with Pike, but I can't figure out, well, what are we going to know or learn that's different?
It could, I mean, at this point, Spock is a lieutenant. It could have something with Spock's promotion. It could have something to do with why Spock was so attached. Because at this point in Discovery, he doesn't seem like he's at that point in their relationship where he's willing to risk his career to bring him to Talos IV. Something has got to escalate or elevate that connection.
Right. We don't have any hints of that yet, and we're down to 4 episodes left of the season. So.
He lost a bet, I'll bet. Tell you what, if you win at 3D chess... if I win a 3D chess, you take me to Talos IV if I ever become severely disabled.
That's an oddly specific request, Captain. I'm not quite sure I understand. But anyway.
It's in the script. Trust me.
Yes. Yes. All right. So we're going to go from the world of what may happen to Pike and why can only blink once for yes and twice for no. And
a whole bunch of that backs kind of up. Boop, boop, boop.
And we talked a bit about the holodeck. And this is a story that comes to us from fizz.org, which is not like, you know, for fizzy drinks or something, P-H-Y-S.
Oh, no, they totally missed it. They should have called it fizz.bin.
No, that would be, then no one would know how to take this seriously.
Your webpages are all disorganized and made up as you go.
Yes, exactly. Star Trek's famous holodeck is a virtual reality stage that simulates any object in 3D as if it were real. However, 3D holographic projections has never been realized. A team of scientists from Bilkent University, Turkey, has now demonstrated the first realistic 3D holograms that can be viewed from any angle.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Their method is highlighted in Nature Photonics. I'm sure we all get that. So if you haven't got the most recent episode, most recent edition of it, we've achieved this feat by going to the fundamentals of holography, creating hundreds of image slices, which can later be used to resynthesize the original complex scene. So that's the story in a nutshell, is that rather than having the single object, they're essentially breaking it down into its pieces so that as you are going around, it's able to reassemble, if you will, the hologram from different perspectives. And I need to remind people that when you see things like Tupac in a concert, or Michael Jackson, that is not a hologram. Okay. That is a projection on a piece of glass.
Yes.
That is the haunted mansion. That is Pepper's ghost. And that is old as vaudeville and probably older than that. We're talking here about actual 3D holograms.
Pepper died? Did I miss an Iron Man movie?
No. Well, that's snapping and all that kind of stuff, you know.
She was caught up in the snapture.
She was.
The snapture. You didn't make that up. You heard that somewhere.
Have you not heard that? That's what everybody's been calling it, the snapture. Half the people went.
And I see what they did there.
Yeah.
The story goes into much more detail, and it also links to really the paper on this. And I couldn't even get through the abstract of the actual article because it's so dense with information. You might have a better shot at it, though. So if you want to read this article and then read the actual paper, then go to the topic is Trek.
Bing.com.
Look for the show notes for episode 41, and you'll have a link to this article. It's titled, Physicists Create Star Trek-Style Holograms. Mm-hmm. But a thing you can actually see in real life and view from any angle is something that I've seen in the past, but it's since I've seen it a couple of times in Washington, D.C., it's been all fixed up, made beautiful. We have a story about it. And the person who's going to tell us the story has recently seen this thing.
I think they should have left it kind of ugly. Give it that Millennium Falcon look.
No.
No. And so what Clinton is alluding to is the Enterprise. The original, not bloody A, B, C, or whatever. It's the original Enterprise that they restored at the Smithsonian, the Air and Space Museum. And I got a chance to see it. I unfortunately did miss the lighting of it.
Ooh.
I know. Anyway, that's a whole nother thing. But anyway, I got to see it and it looks great. I took pictures of it. I know there's a bunch of pictures online of it that you can see up close and see all the details. As a matter of fact, the slideshow I'm talking about here has some really great pictures. And what's funny is how they have it on display. Remember, part of the problem that the Smithsonian was trying to solve was the nacelles were sagging. It was an old model. It's made out of wood and glue and the whole thing. Yet some of the pictures you can see in 1987, they had it hanging from the ceiling. I'm surprised it didn't fall apart then.
Yeah, it's interesting because the slideshow, which is not really in any kind of order, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shows a lot of photos of the Enterprise and its various locations within the Air and Space Museum. And two of them I recognized right away. There was one, it was just like hanging over a set of stairs, which I think is the first time I saw the model. And then they show it hanging in other places that I didn't see. And then, of course, the last place it was before this current refit is in the gift shop, just kind of like tucked away in the basement in the gift shop in the back, and just very sad thing. Mm-hmm. But what I thought the most interesting photo that was in the set was the photo that showed it, the way it arrived at the Smithsonian, all broken into pieces in a wooden box.
Yeah, was a sad, sad picture. It came out of somebody's basement.
Yeah. So, but if you look through it, you can see some of the pictures that as they're restoring it. You can search YouTube and there's a documentary or several videos of them working on it. There's blogs and stuff like that as they were progressing also. But what was cool with one of the pictures I found fascinating was when they put a camera on the inside of not just the saucer section, but of the body of the, the bottom is that, I don't think it's in the nacelles. It was the body.
Yeah. The secondary hull.
The Enterprise hull. You can see right in there. It's like, whoa, this is like a whole, it just looks strange the first time I saw it being inside of the thing. And it's put together like a barrel. It's got several slats, a bunch of slats, so give it a circular look to it. Anyway, you can see all the work that it did to match the colors. And the problem was they didn't really have really good color to go against from the show, to kind of match it up. And I remember them trying to do that color, and it has like a greenish color to it. Maybe it's from sun damage or whatever, but anyway, so yeah, flip through the slideshow. There's like 76 pictures, not just of the Smithsonian having it, but of the Smithsonian having it, but there's a bunch of model pictures of it and some good detail. And I knew some of the things because I followed the blog when they were restoring it, about the one side having wires and the other side having all the windows.
The port side had wires.
Yeah, so rather than, I guess, running the wires on the outside, inside, they only have lights and windows on one side of the Enterprise. If you go to the other side, there's none, and just some wires snaking up the side of it along the neck and everything to kind of get power to where it's supposed to go.
Now, is there any...
Is
there any documentation? Is there any kind of information with the model itself?
Yeah, and it talks about the same stuff. What's funny is I walked in, right? And we go through the metal detectors and everything. And I'm like, where's the Enterprise? Oh, it's right there. It's literally as you come in the door. It's in a big glass case. And behind it, so if you walk towards the back of the model, there's a big touchscreen display. And they, with touch points along all the different areas, like the nacelles, the this, the that, and the other. And there's part of the... people talking about them restoring it. There's people talking about the different parts of it, what they mean and what they could mean in the future, if these technologies become real, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's really cool. If you're in Washington, go over there. And I'll tell you, the Air and Space Museum was fascinating beyond just the Enterprise. There was all kinds of really cool stuff to see. John Glenn's capsule that he was in is, amazing, because you're like, he's only like a foot away, less than a foot away, his back from the heat shield. And I'm like, how in the world did he survive that? I don't know. And things like that. It's a really good place to
That's right inside the door, right? I mean, there's like the first thing you see when you walk in is that, isn't it? At least it was for a long time, the capsule.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where. When you pass the Enterprise and you go into, there's a larger room right ahead, and they have like a large scale version of the Hubble, size. And it's in that room. It's right beside the Hubble. There was a Gemini capsule, and then there was another capsule there too. Anyway, so and planes and all that kind of stuff, and all the big stuff right in the middle. That's where it's at. Yes.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely worth spending a lot of time in there. I mean, go to see the Enterprise, certainly, but, you know, spend time there to see all the other things that are inside that museum.
Yeah. The, they go from, you know, the Wright brothers all the way up. It's great.
All right. Well, that's professional model, professionally built, professionally restored, all professional from top to bottom. Hey, but then you also.
No, I'm sorry. I was trying to break your professional.
Your
stride then you there. Have this podcast.
That's right. And then you have these, plus you have people that say, well, I'm a Trek fan. I think I'll do my own Trek thing. And here's our first story about somebody doing their own Trek thing.
Yeah. Over at CNET.com, they've got the story of Anil. Over the last couple of years, they've been posting pictures on CNET readers' home theaters as part of their ever-growing collection of Show Us Yours. Usually, they post a series of still images, but occasionally a reader submits a video tour of his or her setup. And Anil's video needs to be seen. He is a serious Star Trek fan who built a home theater in his basement with a holodeck theme. His video tour really brings his project to life. So they thought they would highlight it along with some still image slideshow below. And if you've got 18 minutes, he will take you through every excruciating detail. Knowing what I know, what little I know about video editing, this probably should have been a 5-minute thing with some clever editing. But he goes through every detail and takes some liberties, of course. You know, he says, I've got this in a next-gen theme. But as you walk down the stairs, they light up and the sensor automatically plays music. And you hear a TOS door theme, and he's got a TOS communicator, like communication panel from a hallway, a corridor on the wall. Like, whoa, this thing's seriously mixed up. But he is a big time fan. It looks like he's got room to grow in this. His home theater is what I always wanted to do, with sort of the two tiers of well padded leather seats and a projection system. Mm-hmm. Oh man, I dreamt of having the space to do that in a home somewhere, but he actually pulled the trigger on it. This guy's, I don't know if he still has buku bucks or used to have it until he spent it all on this, but this is no cheap outfit that he built up, and he did it right. I encourage you to go over there and watch that. If you go over to the show notes for, what are we on, episode 41
over 41
the topic is trek.com. I get to ring my own bell.
You do. Hey. And so that's one way you can find out, you know, fans. You go to their house and you can see that they've built, you know, a recreation in there. But there's other ways that fandom can kind of pop up places. This story comes to us from CNBC. This new White House report isn't a comic book, but some of the names in it belonged in one. A list of, quote, student interns, close quote, who worked on President Donald Trump's new economic report of the president include the names of Batman, Spider-Man, and Captain America's alter ego, Monty Python cast member John Cleese, a captain of a Star Trek starship, Catherine Janeway, and possibly a purported heir to the throne in Game of Thrones.
You know, I have the same problem when I write software and have to come up with sample data. You make up whatever's on your mind, and this sounds like a good list to me.
Indeed. Yeah. J.T. Hutt, which could be short for Star Wars villain Jabba the Hutt, also making an appearance on the list of funny names, sprinkles amid a larger number of names of real live interns attached to the 711-page report, which was produced by Trump's Council of Economic Advisors. The list is buried on page 624 of the tome. Some names are obvious gags, such as Aunt May, and also Bruce Wayne appears in the list, and also Steve Rogers, a.k.a. Captain America. So somebody having some good fun in here, and apparently this is not the first time this has happened. So whoever is double-checking this work is probably not a fan, and these names are just going right past them. And they're allowing these to go through. So that's another way that fans can show their stuff. But we have even another way that fans can get involved with Star Trek. And Craig is going to tell us about that one.
Yes. As soon as that link comes up. There we go. Sorry about that.
Well prepared. Well prepared.
I know. Just like a
after that segue, I can't believe.
Yeah. So anyway, so a fan uses AI to remaster Star Trek Deep Space Nine in HD.
What?
That's right. So unfortunately, you're highly unlikely to see an official remaster of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. That's what I give the whoa on. Its special effects were shot on video rather than added to film, making an already daunting remastering process that much more difficult. Remastering process that's much more difficult since the it's not a tentpole show like The Next Generation. I would disagree a little bit, but anyway. So CBS may not consider it worth the effort. So machine learning might help it make it easier for fans to fill the gap. And there's a video where you can watch. I love the picture of Nog sitting there at the beginning, but you can watch a comparison between the original SD and the enhanced full HD. And it's pretty good. In some places it's, you know, it's similar. It's not, I wouldn't say it's HD as in, you know, some of the HD that you see nowadays, like full production SD HD stuff, but it's well worth seeing. I think it's good. What do you guys think?
What was interesting to me is that if you recall a couple of episodes ago, we were talking about the HD footage that was shown for the new documentary.
Yes.
For Deep Space Nine. And the differences between the standard and the HD versions were about the same as this was.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell if it's because the show was shot very dark and therefore you don't have a lot of detail no matter what you do, but there was just something not very crisp about the HD footage. And so to me, this HD footage where you could read lettering on a panel behind somebody, mm-hmm. and apparently the sharp contrast areas are better for the AI to be working with. I mean, it's making guesses on everything, but it did bring some things, quote unquote, into focus by doing that.
It's clear. Well, I started to say Cisco's bald head, but if you go look at somebody's hair, the show is always kind of lit dark, you know.
Right.
But there's times when you can see some detail, like you said, panels on the background, but the hair, I always look at the hair on somebody and you can tell, especially in the comparison, that the hair is much clearer and crisp than the SD version. So it did a good job. It did a really good job and a good enough for I'd be willing to sit through it all again. Well, I would do it anyway, regardless.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Anyway. And the space scenes, those seem to be very good as well. And as this article is pointing out, well, you don't really have anything else to upscale because there isn't anything else.
Yeah.
That may be the best you're going to get is to use some sort of algorithm to say, this is what it probably has in the missing information.
You know, it's funny to think that, I mean, it wasn't shot in HD at all. Just to think it was that long ago where there isn't really any HD footage.
20 years.
I know. It's just, but yeah, you just think, seems like it's more modern than.
Well, what's weirder to me is that you have that interim step where if you have something that was shot a fairly long time ago, in this case, we'll use TOS as an example. Mm-hmm. That's easier to remaster in HD because it was shot on film.
True.
Than something that was shot much later and was shot at a resolution that there's no more information. Maybe a little bit more, but there's not much more information than you saw.
Yeah.
It seems like you went backwards before you went forwards again with HD. And HD, of course, if you shot something in 720, and then everybody suddenly has 8K screens.
Yep.
Okay, you're still upscaling it again. I don't remember what the upscaling limit is on like 16 millimeter film, at what point that kind of crosses over to know that they just get, it doesn't look as good. Well, I know that
didn't they film TOS on 35 millimeter? I don't think it was 16. Yeah.
Okay.
16 would be, 16 was more consumer grade.
That was right. But there are crossover limits at which you just can't pull any more out of, out of it.
And the films were, what was the dimension of film? It was something, but maybe that was 35. I can't remember. I had a few frames of actual film. Was it from Search for Spock? Actual film frames with the soundtrack and everything. They got lost.
Long ago, I had one from I had one a couple of slides from Lincoln Enterprises, which Majel was in charge of, that were cuts up. Now, she was claiming it was from the aired show, and one of the shots that I had was of the Enterprise, because of course, if you have a space shot that's on screen for 10 seconds, that's a lot of frames. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't figure out, well, how didn't you ship that off to NBC? Did NBC send it back to you? I can't figure out. Well, how was this actually used and aired? I don't understand that, but there was actual cut up film that they were selling.
Yeah, that happens. I mean, back when they distributed films, you didn't need all the, as soon as it went out of theaters, what do you do with them?
Yeah.
You burn it all.
I'm just looking forward to the Friends in HD. Yes. Remastered Friends.
Golden Girls.
Well, yeah. They can use the AI learning to do that one, and the AI will just slowly kill itself. But anyway, let's move on there. For another way that some fans of the show can become involved in other things are with more professional productions, and this involves an audiobook.
Yes, from PR Newswire, dated March 20th, 2019. New this week, the release of an ambitious audiobook described by publisher Jacob/Brown Press as an audio play with a cast of 100. A massive 28-hour production documents the making of the original Star Trek TV series' first season, to be released in two parts. The program took a full year to produce. Titled These Are the Voyages, Star Trek, the Original Series Season 1 audiobook is drawn from the 2014 Saturn Award-winning book of the same title. Both the printed book and new streaming audiobook cover the creation of the original Star Trek, the making of its two pilot films, and all 29 episodes of its formative first season, 1966-67. Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry endorsed this book series over 30 years ago. Wow. Well, that must have been like a couple weeks before he died. Said author Mark Cushman, after giving interviews and access to more than 40 boxes of documents from the series, Gene connected me with Dorothy Fontana, Bob Justman, and John D.F. Black, three of the writer/producers of Star Trek. And you can hear many of these people on Larry's show. That was just the beginning. It took decades to conduct hundreds of interviews and go through the tens of thousands of documents. The first half of the unparalleled audio production is more than 13 hours in length. It is now available from the publisher and streaming audio platform, awesound.com. That's AWESOUND.com. The principal reader of the audio program is Captain Vic from Star Trek Continues. How about that?
So definitely a project years in the making, 30 years in the making, perhaps we should say for that one. But yeah, 100 voices in that one. That's a big
than your podcast.
It is. That's like 98 more than in my podcast. But anyway,
98.
There's one more story about a way fans can become involved with Star Trek. And it's probably the most bizarre story we're going to talk about this evening, I think, anyway. Why don't you tell us about it, Craig?
It has Technorama written all over it.
I know, right? So Rocky Balboa has a statue in Philadelphia. RoboCop has represented in Detroit. Now Star Trek fans in Ireland want to give the same honor to, wait for it, Chief Miles O'Brien.
Huh?
So he doesn't have to actually stand behind the transporter console, you know, in person. He can just put a statue there and
the same him effect. Behind the console.
That's pretty much what he did. He was a statue. Yeah.
So Irish actor Colm Meaney played O'Brien in the Star Trek Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. O'Brien has been called the most positive representation of Irishness in popular culture.
Okay. Whose quote is that?
Exactly. I don't know. Anonymous.
I would say Irish whiskey might be up there. So now fans want to enshrine the representation of, with a statue displayed in Dublin. One fan, Alex Smith, with why, has launched a petition in the hopes that his petition reaches its signature goal. It will be included in a proposal by Dublin City Council to commission an artist to make a statue of Star Trek's Chief Miles O'Brien to be displayed on the streets of Dublin. And I think they're going to put it right beside the statue of T.J. Hooker.
He's not in Dublin.
Yeah, that's a statue someplace of, you know, T.J. Hooker sliding across the roof of the hood of a car. So,
I saw an ad, I think it was at the movies, and these two guys, they jump on the car and they're.
That's a commercial for Dunkin' Donuts.
That's right. And they were just sliding, and they kept sliding across several cars.
Yep.
Sorry, that was funny.
It's
only funny part of that commercial.
I was hoping to see like a prototype, or what do they call that?
Yeah, me too.
The proof of the statue.
Yeah, I wanted to see something like that. Yeah.
Well, apparently they haven't gotten that far yet. First, they got to get this petition
permission.
Yeah, and then get that before the Dublin City Council, and then have them commission an artist, and then figure out what street wants to have the statue of Miles O'Brien.
I'm sorry, your statue of Miles O'Brien was voted down in favor of Roy from the IT Crowd.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that brings us to the end, mercifully, of Subspace Chatter. But if you don't think that's enough stories to cover and you need more to hold you over until the next episode of The Topic is Trek, as I mentioned before, we have 18 additional stories we did not have time to cover in this episode.
What? And if you go,
absolutely, 18 of them, not 17, 18. If you go to the show notes for episode 31 of The Topic is Trek, over at thetopicistrek.com, you can read all those stories, everything you need to know about Star Trek until the next time we are in your ears with news stories from the world of Trek. But now it's time to press a few more buttons and go out on our main mission.
We're scanning, still scanning.
I don't see anything.
Still scanning.
Captain, this visor sucks.
Can I get this in 16:9?
This Viewmaster sucks.
Well, on our main mission, I guess we should run spoiler alert.
Oh, yes. Yes, we should. Where is it? There it is.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Okay.
And it sounds like
alert.
Oh, and the black alert too. Oh my goodness. We got them all going. Well, black alert is because I think that means that's the extra one for Craig since he hasn't seen these episodes that we're going to be talking about.
All right. I'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. So we're going to be talking about the latest two episodes of Star Trek Discovery, and those are Project Daedalus and The Red Angel. I'm going to read the synopsis of both of these episodes, and then it sounds like Chuck and I are going to talk about them, and
sure.
Craig's going to go Oh, I didn't need to know that. Anyway, for Project Daedalus, the Discovery crew infiltrates Section 31's headquarters and suspicions arise that the crew may have a traitor in their midst. Meanwhile, Burnham tries to help Spock, but her efforts don't go as planned. And then in The Red Angel, Burnham is stunned, I tell you, when she learns her ties to Section 31 run deeper than she ever fathomed. Armed with the identity of the Red Angel, the USS Discovery goes to work on its most critical mission to date.
To save the universe.
Yeah, once again, saving the galaxy. I'm not sure if they're saving the universe, but they're saving the galaxy. If they pull this off, I guess. So we learn a lot in these two episodes. First of all, we learn what happens to Arium, and it ain't good.
Well, we knew something was up. She was infected with a virus of some type. She had
She
should have used Visine to get the red out.
Well, you know, it's those sequel injections that we talked about last time around.
Oh, that's right. Those darn sequel injections. Darn little Bobby Tables.
Just better be so careful about that type of stuff. But, you know, I think it was a shame. We talked about the last time around that now this is great because we have a focus on this character and we're going to get to know more about this character because no one really knew is Arium an android? Is she human? Is she?
We got a little bit of backstory as she was data dumping her memories.
Right.
Yeah. That was actually pretty cool to see her as a person.
Right. And that was the actual actress who was in the footage of the man and the woman on the honeymoon.
The new Arium or the old Arium? I can't
remember. That's the new Arium.
Oh,
so the woman who was playing her this season, that is her. Apparently she was given the option of not appearing in that scene because it would be easier to then get her back into the cast, but she felt, no, it's my character. I should do that part. We get to find out that there's an accident with their shuttle on the way back from the honeymoon and her husband is killed and she is replaced. And it's not mentioned in the episode, but again, in the interview with the actress in what CBS All Access is now running instead of After Trek, the Facebook thing, the Ready Room is what they're calling it now. She said the writer said she was 67% human.
Oh, that was surprisingly more than I thought.
I did like the
scene where she and Detmer had that connection moment, like hooray for augmentation.
Yeah.
Augmentation.
Yeah, but the shame was, okay, great, we get to find out all the stuff about Arium.
And not so much. It's not going to do a lot of good.
And she pulled an episode of our shuttle pod or airlock, and guess which one she didn't get, you know?
She didn't get the shuttle pod.
Exactly. So I don't know. How do you feel about learning so much about a character and then instantly having the character taken away?
Hey, I have an idea. At the end of this show, let's do shuttle pod or airlock for Arium.
I think it's a little late for that one. I think the starship has sailed on that one.
Too soon?
Too soon. I don't know. Were you a fan of saying, "Oh, I know so much about this character now," and oh, look, they're gone.
Yeah, it would have. It was a sad ending. Who was the other actress that was in that three aboard the?
It was Nan and
yes.
Burnham.
Yeah. That looked painful, getting your little rebreathers ripped out of your face.
Yeah,
but that was. I liked the character. I was growing to like her. I was getting to, you get these little insights. You know, from starting out with this, remember we were saying in the first season, most of the crew on the bridge was sort of anonymous, just sort of there in the wings. We didn't even know any names, outside of, I think we learned Detmer's name fairly early on, but, now we're starting to get to know these people. And on the other hand, that was one of the things that some people kind of
said about the original Star Trek is like, well, it's the same seven people on the bridge every episode. How about that? So, you know, having a turnover of characters showing that people do die, not always for the best of reasons. I didn't really quite... the whole investigation of, oh, guess what? Spock was framed. It was a hologram all along. Who knew? What kind of investigation didn't look at things like infrared earlier on?
Yeah, but I'm trying to figure out that. That was also puzzling to me because how are you getting infrared information from that recording? Where, I mean...
Yeah, we can't even we can't even upscale Deep Space Nine.
I did see this episode, and yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, was it embedded in the video or something, or did they capture that as part of the normal capture process?
Probably. Yeah, the problem is though that you would, the problem is that wasn't a camera, so they would have had to have put in the information that said there was no difference. Knowing that someone was going to be looking for infrared information, yeah. So they had to put it in there, but they didn't make it correct.
Ralph, you have one job, to remove the infrared data. My God. You ruined it.
Sorry, boss. So sorry, stupid. Boss. Sorry, boss.
So, that one kind of was...
That was thin. That was thin.
I mean, it's possible you could make the argument that this is now... somehow standard in what is recorded with some stuff for said purpose. I'm just trying to think of some reason of why that information would be there in the first place.
I mean, maybe cameras in the future or recording devices. We don't even know that the cameras have a wider spectrum. They have record more of the EM spectrum than just visible light that today's cameras do.
Right. So now you would have kind of a checklist of things that the doctored footage has to have. And one of the things on the checklist is an infrared signature. And you just go, okay, fine. This is,
I didn't pick up that it was doctored footage. I picked up that it was a hologram. Somebody recorded like setting up a camera in the holosuite. If I go and play cards with Albert Einstein, you're going to record Albert Einstein. I don't have to doctor it up. You're recording what that holosuite or holodeck picks up. Yeah. So that's sort of that was the context that I had it in, is somebody set up this elaborate holodeck holosuite with, hey, let's make Spock fight and kill these people and record it.
So the holograms just have a one signature of the thing. So, so that there's no fluctuation in what their heat signature is because they don't have one.
Right.
Essentially.
So why would they show up in infrared anyway?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Saru.
They shouldn't have a heat signature if all they are is projections of light, unless you wanted to, if you shook somebody's hand, you didn't want to feel empty and cold or empty and empty. You gave them some sort of body heat signature.
Well, you could also have, if you have the holograms projected to the actual room, the room would have a different heat signature than the holograms, which would have none essentially. Right. But so they would be differentiated from the background.
This is where the listener is going, it's a TV show.
I know. But sometimes when things stand out, you go, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I did enjoy, the Discovery attempting to get to the, space station, the blade mines and all that stuff going on. That was quite interesting. And their technique of trying to randomize the patterns that the Discovery was flying.
And they're just going around the bridge and everybody's yelling out their favorite play.
I was going to say, my favorite hits. Yeah.
Burnham 18.
And there's Deborah going, oh my God, you people are making these up now. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah.
We never had one called Gamma 3. That's a planet we went to last week. Come on.
So all this information starts to come together in the second episode, The Red Angel. And I just put up my review. And I say review in air quotes because a lot of times my reviews are just me musing about various aspects of an episode. Yeah. And I had a lot of questions about what went on in the episode about the second episode of The Red Angel. I felt like there were a lot of conclusions that were drawn from the information that they had that I couldn't figure out how they were drawing that conclusion. And then there were things that happened as a result of them drawing those conclusions that to me didn't make sense logically in addition to that.
It seemed like it sort of skipped and jumped a few. they moved the storyline a little too quick, or maybe there were some edits made in the script writing room to get this one to advance. But it felt like, wait, what? Did I just, should I rewind that and try and follow the logic again?
Well, I listened to it, to write the review. I watched some of these scenes like 5 and 6 times, doing the little chart. Okay, if this, then that.
Right.
For these type right. of things. And, some of the steps they were taking, like, I couldn't figure out why they go through all the effort of having Burnham go to sick bay, having Culber give this is 100% match to her bioneural signature. No, it can't be, it's not made up, blah, 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 blah.
What did they match to her? I missed
They matched. Okay, Tilly, this was another bizarreness, but anyway, so Tilly finds in one of Arium's files this folder, this Project Daedalus folder, and inside there is a bioneural signature of the Red Angel, and Tilly says, it's yours, Michael, it's you. And then they, next thing you know, that they're in the sick bay, and Culber's running all these tests, and he says, yes, it's a match, definitely a match. Now, either we've been misdirected again with what we saw at the end of the episode, or 100% match means you or your mother, whichever. one of the two.
We always get you confused. You look so much alike.
Right.
I couldn't. Also, they were saying
they're going to have to explain that next week. It's like, well, how did your neural signature get there if it wasn't you?
Right. So I'm wondering. Funny. Yeah. Well, I'm wondering if we're still being misdirected at this point, that either it's not actually Burnham's mother.
Or Burnham's going to look like her mother when she gets old.
I don't know.
What if Spock is her dad?
Oh, my goodness. I'm getting very
What if it
confused.
Was really Tilly's mom?
They're sisters.
What if she never left her bedroom and she was there all along? You were there. No, but anyway.
Did you just pull a Newhart on us?
No, I pulled a Wizard of Oz on you.
I hear you just rewrote Newhart as Wizard of Oz.
More sweaters. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. you should wear more sweaters. But anyway, I feel like we got to the end of this episode, and it just seems like the 10 episodes leading up to it were vaguely going in this direction, but there wasn't a through line that you could look back on and say that's consistent with where we got and the conclusions that were drawn. One example was that they say, oh, well, the Red Angel, now, okay, we're going to threaten Michael's life. We're going to possibly kill her.
So that the Red Angel can come and save her.
Right. Because the Red Angel shows up when she's in peril, right? That's when the Red Angel.
Okay. Aside from the ship getting crushed by gravity in the early episode, when else did that happen?
All right. But here's the thing. All right. So they're saying because the Red Angel showed up when Michael is killed on Vulcan by the creature in the forge.
Oh, and then that's the Red right. Angel, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Oh, the vision that's going to happen, which must mean it happened, and then back in time, blah, 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 blah. Then the second time was when she's on the asteroid and she gets the piece of, I believe it's a piece of pipe through her leg. So she's trapped there. Everyone else is beamed back to the Discovery and she sees the Red Angel. But the third time the Red Angel appears is when the Ba'ul.
Yeah, what's the
rule? Are attempting to kill all the Kelpians, and Burnham is on Discovery, and Discovery is not being shot at.
That's why I was having a hard time drawing the conclusion that, oh, if she always comes up to save Michael. Like, no, that's not the only time she shows up.
She also was, Michael was not there. Wait. Yes?
Michael's the Red Angel.
Well,
we're not sure of that yet.
Yeah, we're not sure where they're going at this point. I mean, we know what we've seen.
We've been fooled last season. So right. You get to the end and you go, oh, I got to rewatch the whole thing to find, you know, to thread this together again.
Right. Because, you know, obviously the Red Angel appeared in the church at the end of World War III to pull those people to Terralysium. Well, Michael wasn't there that we know of anyway. She wasn't there.
Maybe her younger, older self was. No, wait.
So I feel like
yeah, that conclusion didn't add up.
It's quite possible in that scene that all of a sudden Michael dies and they go, and Spock goes, okay, I have another theory. So I feel like if they had this entire thread, you should be able to go work backwards from there. Now, either there's more information we don't yet know, or it doesn't work back correctly. I like the reveal. I like the twist on its own, mm-hmm. that it's not who you think it is. It's somebody else, but how you got there doesn't feel quite right.
Yeah. The writers are either going to be proven to be really brilliant or really sloppy. That's all I can think right now.
So in a different topic altogether, is Leland dead? Or what the heck was going on there? Getting stabbed in the eye with the...
I think he's dead. That had to hurt.
Well, it certainly hurt.
Didn't he get stabbed in both eyes? Or was it just one?
I thought it was both as well. Matter of fact, when I wrote my article, it was both. And my wife, Bonnie, said, I think it was just one. And I went back and looked, and yep, it was just one.
Because he could come back as a bald eye patch guy. That would be badass.
Well, the trick is that he had his eye really close to that thing, and you just see the length of that spike that comes out?
Yeah, pretty much went all the way through.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that he's dead, and I'm also trying to figure out, all right, if they did all these scans of all the ships to make sure, nope, no trace whatsoever of that AI. Nope, it's no place on the ship. Well, apparently it's on their ship. Or something's going on there, because all of a sudden you hear that double voice thing and stuff happens, and then he's toast.
And was the AI in charge of the Section 31 station?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why it produced holograms of Pitar and launched the mines and. So by blowing up the station, theoretically, we got rid of it there.
Well, Pike says at the beginning of The Red Angel that, well, it may have stored itself someplace off station and is in hibernation. I'm thinking that's an odd thing to just kind of say, unless that's going to happen. You don't put that out there unless it means something. Now, is it storing itself on the Section 31 ship, and why didn't the scan show it?
I have a sneaky suspicion that we haven't seen the end of Arium. Like, she might be carrying, just because they wiped her memory doesn't mean the AI is out of her system.
Well, I'm also concerned because they wiped her system, but then we have Tilly coming in saying, I found this piece of Aaron code, and it was injected by a digital parasite.
And she downloaded all her memories. Great. That's a great way to copy a virus around.
Yeah. So that's running around inside the ship. Is that what you're saying? Hey, okay.
What's this thumb drive sitting under her workstation?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I'll plug it in and find out.
I said, I hope you had a really good sandbox you were doing all this research work in, you know. And last bizarre is Giorgio just kind of messing around with Stamets and Culber just to have some fun, just kind of like, I'm bored. I'm just going to like do weird things to their relationship. That's all screwed up.
I'm still not sure what to make of her, but I like it.
You like it enough to watch a show of her?
Oh yeah.
Well, I think that I think that Tilly's reaction at the end of that scene with all them, Stamets and Culber and Tilly and Giorgio, and Giorgio leaves and Tilly just says, "What the hell just happened?"
Yeah.
You have no idea. All right, but we've now got 4 episodes left of Discovery. We've got to start moving pretty quick here on, you know, finding out what's going on. And clearly we have to now find out what's going on with Pike at the same time.
And we'll have to find out what we're talking about all summer long.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, let's get through all this and sort all this out. See, first. We still have the Scant to get, the return of the Scant to talk about when it appears.
Yeah, order one or two of those for Dragon Con.
You know what? I was going to say, I've got a challenge for you guys. I think we should all 3 wear them.
Maybe on the cruise.
Yeah, I'll wear mine on the cruise next time. Oh, that's right. So you guys start without me. I'll say I'm wearing one while you guys wear the one on the cruise. How about that?
I see. Can you actually order one?
Well,
you probably can't order one yet, but if they show it on the show, someone's going to produce them.
Make one.
Oh, look, you can order the pattern and just sew your own.
Exactly.
Here's one for $300. You know what? Maybe not such a great idea.
Did you just look it up?
Yes, yeah. I did.
But that's the old Scant, not the new Scant. That's the old Scant.
These are of the right colors, red, blue, and gold. You know, for TNG. Yeah, that's the right ones.
Right, but those are the old ones.
Oh, not talking about the
Discovery ones. Yeah. You're gonna get on board with the new stuff. That's the old stuff, even though it's after Discovery. It's the old stuff. Time travel and the disco syndication are hard. All right. So that brings us to the end of our main mission. And now we've spoiled the episodes completely for Craig. So sorry about that.
Dude. I wasn't listening. I wasn't really listening.
Thanks. Yeah. It's time to head to our warp speed roundtable before we get out of here. So last time around, we asked about whether or not we should... why didn't they use a shuttlecraft to get Sulu off of the planet in the TOS episode, The Enemy Within? Mm-hmm. We didn't get any additional responses to that. However, during the episode, we were using, trying to come up with different names for Dr. Seuss stories after the news broke that they were able to do the, all right. Well, listener Diane came up with a few because we said, why don't other people come up with some? So she has 3. The first one is If I Ran the Franchise, which is, of course, If I Ran the Zoo. Mm-hmm. Rick Berman, Will You Please Go Now, which is from Marvin K. Mooney, Will You Please Go Now. And, of course, instead of green eggs and ham, plummix soup and gah.
I will not eat gah in a box.
The sachs. Or fachs.
What was that one, the Assault on Mulberry Street, or what was the title of that book?
The Monsters Are Doing, no, that's Twilight Zone. That's completely different. Yes. I remember the story, but I can't remember the drawing a blank on the name myself.
Yeah. And I'm sure we could come up with something like that. You know, I saw it on Risa.
Yeah. But what happens on Risa stays on Risa. I think we know that already.
Yeah. Chuck, you're missing the point.
Okay. What was the other one? The pleasure planet?
Well, the one they talk about is Wrigley's pleasure planet, or then they had the one that was just from
Shore Leave,
which didn't have a name. And I don't think that's the same as those other two. So
I'm going to have to go through my Dr. Seuss library and come up with something else.
Oh, the fun we'll have. But now it's time for this week.
And the places will warp. The places will warp too.
Exactly. This time, I'm going to ask the question, if you could eliminate one piece of Star Trek technology from the franchise, in other words, take out that gauntlet and just go, and it's gone, what would that one piece of technology be? And I'm going to start this time around, say transwarp drive. We go fast enough as it is. You've already got warp 9.9998. Don't need transwarp drive.
You're tearing up the space-time fabric at the same time.
I'd say nay. Nay, 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 nay.
He wants a hybrid that's half warp, half battery.
Yeah, well, that's nice. All right, let's go next to Chuck.
Lens flares.
No.
Yes, there. Get rid of the lens flares.
It's not a piece of Star Trek technology. That's a piece technology.
It's on the bridge.
That's J.J. Abrams technology. What?
Well, they recently had a lot of lens flare on Discovery as well. It died down for a while, and it came back again.
I can't put my finger on it, but it wouldn't be something major like communicators or phasers or transporters. It would be something more background that you could do without. Replicators, we need replicators. Okay,
I agree.
Because that's just a derivative of transporter technology anyway. Energy to matter, matter to energy. You kind of get that. Can't get rid of impulse drive. Can't get rid of warp drive. What could you get rid of? What technology could you get rid of?
Well, while you're mulling for a second, let me see if Craig has an answer. What would you get rid of?
Well, I think one that I got rid of, because we saw no evidence of it, was a toilet.
Well, we did see one toilet. I think we've seen at least one toilet.
Apparently they got rid of seatbelts too.
What? You saw a toilet? Where?
No. In Star Trek V. They're in the, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy are in the brig, and Kirk presses a button and there's a toilet there. It says, do not use in, space dock or something like that.
Okay. I'll tell you what I thought was, well, I don't know about fun at the time, but I thought it was interesting was on Discovery when the universal translators failed and everybody couldn't understand what everybody else everybody's languages were jarbled except for Saru. He knew how to talk to everybody because I thought the universal translators would probably slow down a lot of the storytelling. But it could bring some interesting different stories.
Right? Yeah.
Well, and look at Picard on the planet with the walls fell. You know, he couldn't communicate with the guy.
Well, it's a bizarre concept to say the way we'll integrate ourselves seamlessly into some of the culture because we have the universal translator.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no one says, why are your lips moving this way? And I'm hearing something else that's like out of sync, like a badly dubbed motion picture.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a convenience, but, you're right.
Right. So yeah,
that would be funny if, Worf always looked like he was, on a Japanese dubbed movie or something, you know?
Well, it's interesting. They did use it. They've used that effect twice in Discovery.
It was as they were introducing the translator or something, or as they were transitioning through the Klingon language.
Right. When she was on the Klingon Ship of the Dead, she was speaking.
How is it that I can understand
her voice?
Translation.
And then on when she was talking to Saru and her sister on Kaminar, it starts off that way as well.
Well, mm-hmm. Also remember on the beginning of Star Trek Beyond, or not the beginning, but yeah, beginning.
Yeah.
I forget her name. She was standing there and the thing analyzed her language real quick. And
Jayla?
No. The woman who came from Beyond.
The alien with the gills around her head, the one that caused the trouble.
Oh, right.
Yeah, at first she was speaking gibberish, and then it went analyzing complete. You know.
Right, it slowly was analyzing it, and you kind of heard this mixture, and then it was very robotic, and then it turned into normal language.
They did that on DS9 too, where they had to train the universal translator. What was the name of the race? I can't remember now. The Skareans, I think it was, because I thought if you saved that race, you would be the Skarean savers. Anyway.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Hey, I got my mnemonics, you got yours.
Long walk.
Oh, I did think we could do without the Atavacron. How about that?
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Then you don't have to be properly prepared.
I made this dish just for you. This disc? No, this dish. It's a story.
Right.
All right. Well,
hey, if you ever listen to Technorama or even this show, you can tell I'm always misunderstood. And there's no universal translator.
That's what we need, of course. It all makes sense now. Well, if you have any idea of what you would like to have, or you think it would at least be interesting to have out of the Star Trek technology, just to change things up a bit, let us know. And we'll mention it on the next episode. You can tweet us over at The Topic is Trek on Twitter, or you can leave a note on our Facebook page.
We'll put it into the M5 computer.
We will. Will it make some noises like an M5 computer? Hint, hint. Do we have M5?
We have M5. Hey, you called the name of the show the Daystrom Saving Time.
My work. All right.
You cannot shut down the computer.
Your starships crush like... Anyway, let's not go quoting every single line from the episode.
So many memorable moments.
It's about time to refill the lithium chamber and get on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, at my podcast, my other podcast, I guess I should say, Comedy Forecast, and that's all one word with the number 4. And beginning on next Monday, as we're recording this, April 1st, it will be the beginning of the 2019 April Podcast Day Extravaganza. So look forward to that. What about you, gentlemen? What is up with you?
We have impressed our engrams over at the Technorama podcast at chuckchat.com/Technorama.
I'm impressing them as we speak.
I'm not impressed at all. So.
Oh, we need a rim shot on this thing. Instead, all we get is the mad tribble. Music!
Well, if you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on a red shirt. We're going to do a conga line on the next cruise. No,
it is all one color, one thing.
I had last week's show notes.
You weren't here last week.
You can't keep up with the show.